translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Sri Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki
Jai.
Lord Shiva said, "My dear son, I, Lord Brahma, and the other demigods who rotate within this universe, under the misconception of our greatness, cannot exhibit any power to compete with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For innumerable universes and their inhabitants come into existence and are annihilated by the simple direction of the Lord." Purport. There are innumerable universes in the material world, and there are innumerable Lord Brahmas, Lord Shivas, and other demigods. All of them rotate within this material world under the supreme direction of the Personality of Godhead. Therefore, no one is able to compete with the strength of the Lord. Lord Shiva also refused to protect Durvasa, for Lord Shiva was always under the rays of the Sudarshan Chakra sent by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srila Prabhupada Ki
Jai.
With the permission of all the devotees, with Maharaj's permission, try to share something on this beautiful verse. Durvasa Muni made a big mistake. Durvasa Muni calculated, misjudged, and caused a grave offense by fashioning a demon to try to kill Ambarish. When Ambarish had not done anything wrong, Ambarish had not done anything in violation of any principle, yet Durvasa Muni, his anger was manifest. Durvasa Muni, his name means many different things, but one of the meanings of his name, Vasa, means to reside, and Dur means difficult. So Durvasa literally means one who is very difficult to live with. So sometimes there are, you know, we live with personalities. Sometimes we are those personalities ourselves who tend to overreact or become very emotional, become very angry, very outspoken. They're not so easy to live with. Durvasa Muni, we could say, is one archetype of such a person in the Bhagavatam. Quickly, of course, Durvasa Muni realized his mistake because Lord Vishnu released a Sudarshan. Darshana means to see, and Su means very good or very auspicious. So Sudarshan literally means that which is, or seeing, always auspicious in a good way. So the Sudarshan is Lord Vishnu's weapon that always goes to chastise those that need chastisement. And of course this chastisement is done in a very good spirit of seeing what is best for the person who committed a crime. So the Sudarshan Chakra began to follow Durvasa Muni. And Durvasa Muni was running and running and running. And he was going to many, many different personalities and places trying to find shelter. And here in these two verses, we find how he goes to take shelter of Brahma. And Brahma says, "Sorry, can't help you." Then he thinks, "Maybe I should go to Shiva." So he goes to Shiva, and Shiva says, "Sorry, no can do, can't help you." It's clear, the Shastra explains it again and again. Hiranyakashipu performed 36,000 years of austerity and worshipped Lord Brahma. But when Lord Nrisingadev appeared on the scene, was Brahma anywhere to be seen? Brahma couldn't come to help him. Ravana performed so many thousands of years of austerity to Lord Shiva. But when Lord Ram came to kill him, was Shiva anywhere to be seen? But Ajamil, he did many, many years of sinful activity. And at the end, when he just said Narayana, four syllables, even not indicating the Lord but indicating his son, who appeared there without a flash of an eyelid, the messengers of Narayan, the Vishnudutas, and they saved him at the last moment. The Lord will come. The demigods cannot ultimately protect, because here Shiva and Brahma are saying that people have a misconception of our greatness. The real person's greatness is the Supreme Person, because we are simply servants of him. In these two verses, we're learning a very, very important principle of where do we go to take shelter. They say you can understand someone's consciousness by what they take shelter of in times of difficulty. If we really want to know where we are in spiritual life, then in times of difficulty, we can just observe ourselves and ask, where do I go for shelter? Where do I go for comfort? Where do I go for solace? Where do I go to relieve whatever is painful within my heart? And if one is taking shelter of the Supreme Lord, then that is a very, very good sign. When something is squeezed, what is really inside will come out. When you squeeze a lemon, you will not get orange juice. Because ultimately, whatever is inside will come out. So, where do we take shelter of? And Durvasa Muni is learning in a roundabout way, in a hard way, that the only person to take shelter of is the Supreme Lord, and ultimately the Supreme Lord says to him, ultimately you have to take shelter of my devotee. We have to somehow in our life come to this point, this conclusion that there's no other shelter than the Supreme Lord and his devotees. We remember the famous pastime of His Grace Hari Vilas Prabhu, who once asked Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, what does it mean to be humble? And some of you will remember Srila Prabhupada's very famous reply. When Hari Vilas Prabhu asked Prabhupada, what does it mean to be humble? Prabhupada said, humility means to understand without a shadow of a doubt that nothing in this world can save you. Not your position, not your money, not your family, not your fame, not your gun, not your arrangements. Only Krishna's mercy can save you. This, Prabhupada said, is humility. Humility means that to understand there's nothing else that can save me except Krishna's mercy, except Krishna's grace. And so the entire Srimad Bhagavatam is meant to give us faith that we can let go and completely rest in Krishna's embrace. If you look at the Shastra, the structure of the scriptures, then they're very, very similar. For example, if you look at the Gita, the Bhagavad Gita, the essence of the Gita is in the middle, isn't it? Where Krishna tells Arjuna that just fall in love with me, be my devotee, always think of me. But although the Gita essence is in the middle, how does the Bhagavad Gita end? The Bhagavad Gita ends in the final six chapters with Krishna then telling Arjuna about Jnana Yoga, about renunciation, about how ultimately then to let go. You see, because we can know the essence of life, but then to be able to let go and renounce from the world is still difficult. Letting go is not easy. Therefore, although Krishna gives the essence of the Gita right in the middle, he doesn't stop there. He then goes on to teach us the science of jnana and knowledge to actually help us to realize how to let go of the world. If you look at the Bhagavatam, it's the same. The essence of the Bhagavatam is right in the middle. It's the 10th canto, but if you count the verses, the 10th canto began on the 4th day of recital. Because if you count the verses, 9,000 verses are in 9 cantos, and 9,000 verses are in 10, 11, and 12 cantos. So if you look at the Bhagavatam, the essence of the teachings, Krishna's pastimes, Krishna's love, is right in the middle, 10th canto. But why didn't the Bhagavatam end at the 10th canto? Because then Krishna went on to give the 11th and 12th cantos instructions to Uddhava and instructions about Kali Yuga, because those instructions help us to let go of the world. It's not easy to let go. And the whole science of Srimad Bhagavatam is meant to help us let go of the world and fully fall into Krishna's embrace. I wanted to read something for you. All of us know what is going on right now in Ukraine. And there was a very interesting letter that one of the devotees in Ukraine wrote. She was stuck in Mariupol, I think that's how you say it, Mariupol. And this is the letter that she wrote. Of course, I think some devotees are still there, they cannot get out. And that entire city has been practically annihilated. But she wrote this very interesting letter. She said, "I am going through a very severe test now, and I will start my story from the beginning. 32 hours before the start of the war, people began to receive strange messages that the war was starting and they had to leave the city. On this day, we had an evening chanting of the holy names of the Lord in the temple. My spiritual guide and I approached another devotee for instruction on what to do, but we did not hear anything concrete in response." And then she goes on to explain what they did, how many devotees left the city, how some devotees couldn't get in contact with others. She explains how there was bombing, how, you know, they didn't know whether their friends and family were alive. And then this was her final reflection. "Today, all Mariupol devotees are alive, although not all of them were able to get out of the city. Everything material fell off in an instant. I don't know what is happening to my family members. It brings great suffering. I pray that every day that they are safe, fed, and still alive." And then she says, "My beloved devotees take great care of each other. Everywhere we are accepted and cared for. And we also do not forget to serve our hospitable guests. We have a lot of realizations. The brightest is that we finally understood what the material world is like. And what we would do, nothing if it wasn't for Srila Prabhupada." And then this is the point I wanted to focus on. She writes, "Everything superfluous in my life has fallen off. Stupid desires, aspirations, worries, all this has lost its meaning. Faith has intensified. Krishna shed special mercy on us and took everything away, leaving his holy names, which are everything. In contrast, I felt sweetness and intense joy while chanting, putting everything in the hands of Krishna, even if it was because we were forced. I am grateful for this experience, although it was very painful. I intend to continue serving Krishna and his servants with even greater enthusiasm. Thank you very much. By your grace, I have acquired many valuables. In this war, I was born as a servant of a servant. This most important event in my life overshadowed all adversity. Amazing. So I thought that's so amazing how the material world is structured in such a way that eventually everything will be taken away. And the material world is designed in that way to help us to understand what is of eternal value, what will endure, and what we can ultimately take shelter of. Therefore, the theme of this world is that everything is constantly changing. Your body is changing. Your health is changing. The people around you are changing. The world is changing. The fortunes are changing. Your situation, your ashram, your place of residence may change. Everything changes. Once I was thinking that I would go back to my old school because I thought, you know, when I go there, I will get many realizations, you know, 20, 30 years ago, and you realize, my God, I was there, I'm here now. So I was thinking for many, many years that I'll go back to my old school. And then one day I was driving in my neighborhood and I looked and they had knocked the whole school down. Just bulldozed the whole school. And in that moment my heart dropped. Because I thought that was a museum of so many memories. It almost felt like a part of me had been taken away. And then it just confirmed what Krishna says. Anityam asukam lokam. This dukhalayam shashvatam. Everything is temporary. Everything is taken away. So in these verses, Durvasa Muni is showing us that ultimately, we have to take shelter of the Supreme Lord. But it's not so easy. However, the Bhagavatam is there to basically help us take shelter of the Supreme Lord. The Bhagavatam is so scientific and is structured in such a way to help us take shelter of the Supreme Lord. I'll explain to you how. But with your permission, I'd like to do an experiment. I know this is not conventional Bhagavatam class, but I hope you'll forgive me. I think it may help. Poo, can I get your help? Yeah, if you can stand up, and maybe Christopher, can you stand up as well? I want both of you to stand here and face the deities, one in front of the other. And both look at the deities. Yeah. Not next to each other, one in front of each other. Whoever wants to go. You go a little bit more forward. Okay. Now the rule is you look forward, you can't look back. Okay. Now what I want you to do is, Rupa Raghunath Prabhu, is lift your two arms. You can put them like this, like wings. Okay. And Christopher, I want you to put your hands out. Just ready. Now what I'm going to ask you to do at one point, Rupa Raghunath Prabhu, don't be scared. What I'm going to ask you to do is just fall back. Not now. Don't need to worry. The floor is hard. The floor is very hard. But the good news is that Christopher's there. And he's a nice guy. He's going to catch you. Yeah, he does speak English. You feel okay?
Yeah.
Feel a little nervous or no?
A little bit nervous of the attention.
Yeah, nervous of the attention.
Yeah.
Okay. So after three,
okay.
Just fall back. Close your eyes, fall back, and don't worry, he'll catch you. Three, two, one, go. Viva! Okay, yeah, I guess it's not. You felt a bit nervous, huh?
Yeah, it was a strange feeling when you let go and in the, when you're already falling, there's a moment of questioning. Like,
there's a moment of doubt.
Yeah.
Even though you know, you trust me.
Yeah.
Right? Trust Christopher, you know all the devotees are here. But even then, there's a doubt. Now let me ask all of you, in order for Rupa Raghunath to fall into Christopher's hands, what does he need to know? Or what does he need to have faith in? That he's going to catch him? So you need to, first thing you need to have faith in is that he loves you. In other words, he cares for you. He's going to catch you. You need to have faith that he loves you. What else does he need to have faith in?
He's strong enough.
Super soul. Oh, in the super soul. Okay. Okay. So, all right. Faith in Krishna, the super soul. What did you say?
The same.
The same? Krishna, the super soul. Yeah, okay. Yeah, Madhavendra Puri.
He is strong enough.
That he's strong enough. Right? Tomorrow, if I would put, like, I don't know, Lochinananda's daughter there to catch you, you might be like, okay, she's nice, but I don't know if I'm going to fall back, you know? Okay, so we need to know that Christopher loves you, that he's strong enough. Yeah? What else do you need to know? Yeah, Dhyana Thakur? Yeah, that he understands the game and that he knows. That he knows how to catch you as well. You know, someone may be struck, but maybe they'll use the wrong technique. And then it's like finito, right? So you need to know that he loves you, that he's strong enough, and that he knows, he's got knowledge. There's one other major thing. There's one other major thing which will allow you to fall back. You need to have one other thing.
You will not go away in the meantime.
You will not go away. That he's actually there. That he's actually... You might be like, yeah, Christopher loves you. He knows. He's strong. But he's out there taking prasad. Not falling back. You know? Right? This is it. If you know these four things, there will not be a shadow of a doubt. You will be able to fall back. But if you have doubt in any one of these things, there will be a hesitation. So which of the four things did you have doubt in? No, I'm joking. Was there anything you had doubt in? No, but yeah. And sometimes just the attention, the pressure of the situation. It's very interesting because we need exactly the four things, same things, to let go and fully depend on Krishna. Unless you're confident that Krishna loves you, unless you're confident that Krishna has everything within his power to help you, and unless you're confident that Krishna knows what he's doing and his arrangements are perfect, and unless you know that Krishna actually exists, dependence on Krishna will only remain a concept. Only when those four criteria are fully fulfilled, then one can genuinely depend on Krishna and not have any reservation or any doubt. And so then the next question will come, how do we develop those four things? And that is why the Bhagavatam is there. Because if you look at the Bhagavatam, what it does systematically through every canto is it's basically coaching the reader into how to ultimately surrender to Krishna. There are 10 topics in the Bhagavatam, isn't it? In the second canto, it's mentioned that there are 10 topics in the Bhagavatam. Atra sarga visargascha sthanam poshanamutaya manvantereshu nanukatha nirodha muktira ashrayaha. There are 10 subjects in the Bhagavatam, and what the acharyas explain is that 9 of the subjects are simply there so that one can understand the 10th subject. Does anyone know what the 10th subject is?
Ashraya.
Ashraya. And ashraya means what? The supreme shelter. 9 topics are only there so that you can put your faith completely in Krishna, who is what? The supreme shelter. So that means 9 cantos are there for you to ultimately have the confidence to fully take shelter. And then what the acharyas explain is that it's not that one topic is in one canto. They say every topic is ultimately in every canto. But then other acharyas say that there are specific cantos which focus on specific topics. So in the original commentary on the Bhagavatam, Bhavartha Dipika by Sridhar Swami, he explains the Bhagavatam in this way. He says, the topic of the first canto is Adhikar. Who is qualified to hear Bhagavatam? Because there you hear about Parikshit and the qualities that he had that made him a good listener of Bhagavatam. Therefore, the topic of the first canto is Adhikar. The topic of the second canto is Sadhana. Because now Parikshit is ready to hear what's the first thing that Sukadev Goswami tells him? The process by which one can connect with the Supreme Lord, the process of Sadhana. Therefore, you find in the second canto, many different processes of Sadhana are given. But then Bhakti Yoga is established as the highest sadhana. Then the third canto focuses on sarga. Sarga means creation, primary creation. Creation of the material elements, the ingredients, the building blocks of the universe. And then fourth canto is said to focus on visarga, secondary creation. What creation goes on after Brahma is born, and how is the universe then populated? The fifth canto focuses on sthanam, which means maintenance, the planetary systems, and how living entities are placed into different situations in this world in order to maintain, and how does the Lord maintain them in this world. Sixth canto is all about poshanam, which means literally nourishment, but it also means protection. Therefore, we find in the sixth canto, Ajamil is protected, Ritrasura is protected, Chitraketu is protected, the Lord's protection. Canto number 7 deals with Uti, which means creative impetus. How material desire, how material greed leads to entanglement in the material world. And the prime example is Hiranyakashipu. Because Hiranyakashipu means one who is seeing gold everywhere. Eighth canto, Manvantara, deals with all the different manus and how the Lord appears in different manus. And ninth canto, which we're reading right now, is all about Ishanukatha, talks of the Supreme Lord. Because in this canto, we hear about Lord Ramachandra, and we hear about the events which led up to the advent of Krishna, Krishna's genealogy. The 11th canto deals with Mukti, because the Lord instructs Uddhava. And he explains to Uddhava that I'm going to leave this world and you should also prepare to renounce this world. But the Lord gives him instructions on how to become disentangled from the world. And the 12th canto deals with Nirodha, or annihilation. Because the Lord explains how the universe becomes annihilated, and ultimately how the body becomes annihilated, and then ultimately how Parikshit becomes annihilated by the bite of the snake bird. All of these 9 topics exist in order to help one approach the 10th topic, which is Ashraya Krishna, the Supreme Lord, who is the supreme shelter of everything. And so, if you analyze all of the topics of the Bhagavatam, these 9 topics and all of the pastimes that come with them, they are ultimately aimed at giving you faith in these 4 things. That Krishna loves you, that Krishna is all-powerful, that Krishna is all-knowing, and that Krishna actually exists and you can experience Him. We hear, for example, how loving Krishna is in the pastime of Ajamil. Because despite all of Ajamil's qualification, when the Lord saw one small opportunity to try and save him, then the Lord took that opportunity and delivered him. That's how loving the Lord is. For example, in the pastime of Sudama, we learn that Krishna knows your heart. Krishna knows everything. Because Sudama, he came to Krishna, who was in Dwarka, and he had something in his heart that he was coming there for, but he never revealed what that was. But even though he never revealed anything, when he went back, Krishna had fulfilled everything. Because Krishna is within the heart. He knows everything. He knows us. He knows us better than we know ourselves. And His arrangements are always perfect. For example, in the Bhagavatam, we find the pastime of, for example, we can say Dhruva, for example. Or let's say Prahlad Maharaj. And Prahlad Maharaj, his pastime helps us to have faith in the Lord's power. Hiranyakashipu was so powerful. And it seemed as though, you know, Prahlad Maharaj could have been annihilated in so many ways. But the Lord circumvented everything and came to protect Prahlad, to show us that the Lord has full power, full dominion over everything. And then ultimately the Bhagavatam trains us in how to actually experience the Lord as a reality, that He is actually there. And therefore in the Bhagavatam, through all these pastimes, we're learning the sadhana of how to actually interact with the Lord. And so if one actually reads the Bhagavatam very, very closely, if one reads it with deep attention and deep contemplation on the mood behind every pastime and the character of Krishna and the character of Krishna's devotees, then one will be filled with the faith that Krishna loves me, Krishna is all-powerful, Krishna knows what needs to happen in my life, and Krishna is actually existing. And when one is filled with that, there will be no difficulty whatsoever in surrendering to Krishna, in taking full shelter of Krishna. And therefore, the Srimad Bhagavatam has to become one's constant companion. Therefore, Sanatana Goswami, he says, Madeka Bandhu Madsangin Madguru Madmahadhana Madnishtaraka Madbhagya Madananda Namostute. He looks at the Bhagavatam and he says, Madeka Bandhu, the Bhagavatam is my only friend. Madsangin, the Bhagavatam is my constant companion through all the changes that I inevitably experience in this life. Madguru, the Bhagavatam is my teacher. Manmahadhana, the Bhagavatam is my greatest wealth. Mannishtaraka, the Bhagavatam is that which is lifting me up. Madbhagya, the Bhagavatam is my greatest fortune. Madananda, the Bhagavatam is the source of all my happiness. Namostute, therefore I offer my respects unto Srimad Bhagavatam. Because the Bhagavatam is scientifically, systematically and comprehensively rewiring someone's consciousness so that they can fully take shelter of the Supreme Lord. And therefore, it is the greatest gift. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada often said, of all of his... We could make an argument that of all of Srila Prabhupada's projects in this world, the project to present Srimad Bhagavatam to the world was the most important project. It's the project that he did from day one till the final day. It's the project that he spent the most time on. It's the project that he gave the best time of the day, every single day to, the early morning hours. It's the project that when he had completed the first canto, he felt, now I'm ready to go to the West. And it's the project that he said when he heard the Bhagavatam was going out to the world and books were being distributed, he said, it gives me life. It gives me life to continue. So the Srimad Bhagavatam is a real gift. We could analyze the Bhagavatam in so many ways about how it beautifully changes someone's consciousness. But the ultimate thing that the Bhagavatam is leading us to is Ashraya, the shelter of the Supreme Lord. And that is done through all the other topics and all the other pastimes that are given within Bhagavatam. So maybe I can stop here and see whether there are any questions, comments, corrections. Yes, what could you
do? Quick comment. Ramalila Devidasi, she is in Dijon, and the president of France came there. There's a picture in the news of him holding the Srimad Bhagavatam. And actually, from what I heard, 5 years ago she gave him a Bhagavad Gita, so she told him, you remember I gave you a Bhagavad Gita before? He said yes. I don't know if that's, well, this is what I heard, but we see, you see the picture of him with the Srimad Bhagavatam in his hand.
Jai. Ramalila Mataji ki.
Is the Chaitanya Charitamrita and all the books about Lord Chaitanya structured in a way that we're going to take shelter of Lord Chaitanya? Are they similarities?
So are the other books structured in such a way that we take shelter of Lord Chaitanya?
No, the books about Lord Chaitanya.
The books about Lord Chaitanya, are they structured in a similar way to what I mentioned? Yeah. Yeah, the Chaitanya Charitamrita is also structured in a scientific way in this way. Sometimes the way commentators say the Chaitanya Charitamrita is structured is they say the Adi Leela is dealing with Sambandha, the Madhya Leela is primarily dealing with Abhideya, and the Antya Leela is dealing primarily with Prayojana. Therefore, in the Adi Leela of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, you find a lot of philosophy. The first 13 chapters are all tattva, the identity of the Supreme Lord. Then in Madhya Leela, you're finding about Mahaprabhu's many conversations about the practice of devotional service. And then in the Antya Leela, you're finding about Mahaprabhu in the Gambira, experiencing the highest ecstasies of Srimati Radharani. So you see, if you look at every scripture, it's very, very scientifically presented. And when you actually study the scripture, you can see. Just like Gita, sometimes we tell people that the Bhagavad Gita is very simple. It teaches you how to live, how to love, and how to let go. Because the first 6 chapters are all about karma yoga, how to live in the world. The second six chapters are all about bhakti yoga, how to awaken, reawaken the dormant love that's within the heart. And the final six chapters are all about jnana or renunciation, how to let go. If you want to live a happy if you want to have a happy life in this world, you have to know how to live. But not just how to live, you have to know how to love. But not just how to love, you have to also know how to let go. And so the Gita is scientifically presented, the Chaitanya Charitamrita is scientifically presented. If you look at the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami is beautifully dividing it into different directions and different parts of the ocean, and systematically taking one from sadhana bhakti to bhava bhakti to ultimately prema bhakti. So yeah, every scripture is it's, when we read it, sometimes we think it's random and sometimes we can't see how it's progressing, but when you look very closely, it's progressing in a very systematic way. Krishna, through the Shastra, has a very specific methodology of how to change our consciousness. Yeah.
How do you develop such a perspective on the scripture? Because often I find like when you're reading, you're very much in the specifics of the pastime that you're reading or the purpose. But how do you learn like to get a higher perspective and see how each little pastime fits into the bigger picture, so we can see like a greater plan?
Yeah.
Could you repeat the question, please?
Yeah, so the question was, how do we see the structure of the scripture in that way that it has this kind of structure? Because sometimes when we're reading a pastime, then we're so into that pastime that we can't see like how it all fits in together. Sometimes what is useful when we read Shastra is to sometimes zoom out and have a bird's eye view of the Shastra and have an overview. That's why you see at a specific point in Srimad Bhagavatam, I can't remember which canto it is, maybe four? At some point in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada started putting summaries of the chapters. It's not in all of the cantos, but there was this kind of sense that a summary would help, you know, because sometimes when we just overview the Shastra and then we go deeper in, then we can actually understand. So that's why we don't just, you know, like one time a devotee said, Prabhupada asked the devotee, "Are you studying my books?" He said, "Yes, Prabhupada, I'm reading." Prabhupada said, "No, are you studying my books?" He said, "No, I'm reading." Prabhupada said, "Not reading, are you studying my books?" Because there's a sense in which reading the books and studying the books is different. When we study the books, then we're looking for what is Krishna actually trying to do here? What is Krishna's line of thought? Or what are the acharyas trying to systematically teach us? And therefore there's a value in zooming out, looking over the Shastra, and then going in. Because... it helps. You know, like here is amazing because there's so many paintings, beautiful paintings. This painting here is like my favorite painting ever. It's an incredible painting. Yeah. But they say when Picasso, when he used to paint, then he would go in and he would look at like detail. But every so often, the painter has to step away from the canvas and look at the whole thing. And then when you look at the whole thing, then you can go in and again paint, and you know. So Shastra is like that. We're constantly going in and out. We're going in and out. We're trying to see like... So it helps to have a structure. So yeah, I guess have an overview, study, look at the structure and then go in. And or do them simultaneously.
Many people think that these stories are because they're so far out, because they're from other kalpa or things, and they think it's mythology. What do you tell?
So sometimes people say these stories are too far out, they're mythology, you know, oceans of milk or animals speaking or, you know, people jumping from one continent to another.
A boar taking a whole earth planet up.
10 million wives.
10 million wives. Yeah. Just on Varaha Dev, once I was in Liverpool and we were distributing books. I don't know how many of you know English football, but Liverpool and Everton are like rivals. Liverpool wear red and Everton wear blue. So I was once in Liverpool and I showed one boy the Krishna book. I said, yeah, there's stories of Krishna, and he's like, he kills all these demons, and then he, you know. So I was describing, he said, this is amazing, this Krishna is amazing. So I said, here's the book. He said, no. I said, why? He said, he's blue. He's blue, and I'm a Liverpool fan. Liverpool means reds. So this is what he said to me. He said, I'm blue, So then I said, no, but you know, this same Krishna, and then I showed him the Dasa Avatar picture. I said, this same Krishna, he comes back to the world in a reddish form. And when he comes in the reddish form, he plays football with the universe. And he goes, wow, God, red, plays football with the universe? I want the book. A sad point, but yeah. But some people think it's mythology. This is what I say to them. 100 years ago, if you told someone you could pick up a plastic thing, press a few buttons, and speak to someone across the other side of the world, they'd probably think you're completely mad. This is only what happens in movies. But now, 100 years later, we use a phone without even a second thought. That's how much the world can change in 100 years. So when we're dealing with a civilization of thousands of years ago, naturally we can understand that these are going to be things way beyond our current scope of perception. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada's general response to those who were questioning the Bhagavatam as mythology and so on and so forth was, he would say, it's like the frog in the well. And here we have a live example. There's so many things that we do today that are just completely normal for us, that if you told someone 100 years ago, they wouldn't be able to grasp it at all. But we do it today without even the blink of an eyelid, which shows that our perception is very, very limited. But generally, Srila Prabhupada, when he wanted us to present the Bhagavatam, we should present things that are relatable, things that people can immediately appreciate, things that make logical sense. And then as people build their faith, then we expound more on other things which may be beyond their perception. So the Bhagavatam isn't just full of things that are completely inconceivable. The Bhagavatam is also full of things which, you know, for example, the embryology of the third canto, where Kapila Dev is explaining to Devahuti how the womb, how the embryo in the womb is developing through the months of pregnancy. If you cross-reference this with modern embryology, then you will see how accurate the Bhagavatam's description of embryonic development is. So we can present that to the world. We don't have to present to the world that Nanda Maharaj had 900,000 cows, and that, you know, Ugrasen had so many soldiers, and that there were 600, you know.
3 trillion bodyguards.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You don't.
Yeah, just don't go there. There's no need immediately. There are so many relatable things in Bhagavatam. So,
okay. You gave a definition of humility, but Prabhupada, another time somebody asked him, he said, he smashed his hand on the desk and said, "Be bold for Krishna."
Yeah, I think he said that to Tamal Krishna Maharaj, I think, isn't
it? Oh, yeah. What was that?
Srila Prabhupada said to Tamal Krishna Maharaj, humility means to act boldly for Krishna. And then in the Gita, Krishna, Srila Prabhupada defines humility as not being anxious to have the satisfaction of being honored by others. So humility has so many dimensions. But in today's context, humility is to realize nothing can save you. It's not, nothing's going to save you. Not your abilities, not your power, not your influence. Nothing will save you. Only Krishna can save you.
Even being bold means you're not on your own account. But
yeah. Yeah. Acting boldly for Krishna means putting Krishna in the center, taking yourself out and depending on Krishna. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Any other final? Yes.
Says, for me, the Bhagavatam, the Bhagavatam lead us to the chanting of the holy name.
Yes.
What's the question?
So Jyoti Prabhu is saying for him the Bhagavatam leads to the chanting of the holy names. Yes. So what happens is Jiva Goswami, he explains how do you understand what is the essence of a scripture. And he says you look at what is talked about at the beginning, what is talked about at the end, what is talked about right in the middle, and what is stressed in every single canto. And so when you look at the Bhagavatam through this analysis, then what does the Bhagavatam talk about at the beginning when Parikshit asks his question? What should a dying man do and what is the duty of all people in all situations? Then one of Sukadev's main answers he says is Yoginam nipanirnitam harir namanukirtanam. The first answer that Sukadev gives is you must chant the holy name. So the beginning is the holy name. What's the very final verse of the Bhagavatam? If you look in the 12th canto and go right to the end and go to the final verse, Nam sankirtanam yasya sarva papa pranashanam. Pranami dukha samanas tam namami harim param. That one should just chant the holy name. So the beginning is the holy name. The final verse of the Bhagavatam is the holy name. Then what is right in the middle, the sixth canto? What is there right in the middle of the Bhagavatam? The glorification of the holy name through ajamyo. Sanketyam parihasyam vais stonam helam mevava. Vaikunthanam agrahanam asheshagaharam vidum. It says if you chant the holy name, even if it's neglectful, jokingly, done without proper attention, even then, Vaikunthanam agrahanam, if somehow you grasp that transcendental vibration, asheshagaharam vidum, then so many sinful reactions are annihilated. So the middle is the holy name. And then the constant theme through every canto is the holy name. So yes. So that therefore, once when I made this statement that Srila Prabhupada's main project was Srimad Bhagavatam, someone said, no, no, I don't agree with you. I think that Srila Prabhupada's main project was spreading the holy name. And so I said, actually, the spreading of the holy name and the spreading of Bhagavatam are connected. Because if you read the Bhagavatam, it will only ultimately teach you to take shelter of Krishna. And how do you take shelter of Krishna? By taking shelter of the holy name. So the Bhagavatam also is the main means of spreading the holy name of Krishna. Yes,
I remember I read that Prabhupada said to Tamal Krishna that before dying, he said, before leaving this world, my only purpose is to make people happy.
Yeah.
So it looked like he do all this wonderful journey and scripture just to make me happy. So I want to thank you, Prabhupada, for that.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, it's funny you should mention this. Once in the manor, there was one bhakta who had the locker next to me. His name was Bhakta Leo. He was from Israel. And he had this very quote from Tamal Krishna Maharaj's, I think it's the final days. And Prabhupada writes, I have no other motivation. I am only planning how people can be happy. So this exact quote that you mentioned, he had it stuck on his locker right next to mine. And I remember seeing that every single day. This very quote that you mentioned. Yeah, Prabhupada said, I have no other motivation. I'm only planning how people can be happy. So yeah, Prabhupada was just the ambassador of India's message of peace and goodwill. That's how he introduced the Bhagavatam. When he came to America, Prabhupada introduced the Bhagavatam with a handbill. And on the handbill, it had a picture of the Bhagavatam and it said, India's message of peace and goodwill.
And interestingly, the six shastakam, he has the whole six shastakam prayer there.
Yes.
And like, if that is it, if it's that, like the Bhagavatam.
Yeah, the six shastakam, yes. Yes. Thank you so much, Granth Raj, Srimad Bhagavatam ki.
Jai!
Jai!
Jai!